be Irulao. Watch your back, watch your back. A chance is gonna get you. Watch your back, watch your back. A chance is gonna get you. Watch your back, watch your back.
Oh, there's a chance gonna get you. Watch your back. It's a coming from the utility. Gotta wash those red hands. It's the crimes of the bad land. It's the crimes of the bad land.
Hi, Douglas.
Hi, Julie.
How you doing? Doing good. How you doing?
That has been some time now, a few weeks since we haven't recorded.
Yeah, we haven't. We're out of practice.
We're missing it. Yeah,
I'm sorry. Just were struggling to just get the...
Who starts? Who says what?
What? Yeah.
Hello, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Welcome to Crimes of the Basque Lands.
Yes.
Douglas is going to open his beer.
Yes, our special effects.
There we go.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers to everybody.
Welcome back to recording.
Exercising and driving and doing all these responsible things.
That is right. We praise you.
Praise you, yes.
Keep the I haven't been driving.
Arms. No.
But exercising I have been doing.
And I don't drive. Shock horror. All our American listeners are like, what? Hyperventilating.
How is that possible?
It's called Europe, guys. It's okay. It works out.
Public transport. It's a miracle. Well, those of you who live in urban areas probably understand. But anyway, I miss driving. I really do. I've been considering getting my license this year because I'm just kind of sick of not being able to rent a car if I want to.
But do you
or
though?
Just we have a car.
Exactly.
And I just would like to be able to go, you know, use it.
Do some errands.
Go do some errands. Go to the beach. You know. Just fun stuff.
What's wrong with the metro, Jules?
Yeah, then you gotta walk.
Did we say
it was enough of walking.
Did we say it's a cheeky zone today?
Oh, yeah. Today we're doing a cheeky zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an episode where we just tell you little stories and headlines.
From the news. Just,
yeah.
Yeah, just chit-chat about different occurrences connected to Basque.
The Basque lands, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because it's a true crime podcast.
It is.
And it's anything and everything in the Basque lands, which
yes.
includes
anybody
the Basque country.
Who's got a connection to the Basque country and is somewhere around the whole world.
Yeah.
Or in space.
Anywhere
these days.
In the world. Or in space, apparently.
Not many crimes
or
yet. Though,
underwater.
But... Mm-hmm.
People going underwater a lot more.
I'm sure there's been more crimes. I mean, there's already been crimes underwater, but...
Yeah, that submarine.
Yeah. What, the rich people? That's not a crime.
Kind of. The crime was bringing the teenage boy, forcing the teenage boy.
Oh, there was a teenage boy?
Yeah, it was like the son of one of them, and he didn't want to go.
Oh, my gosh.
He was forced to go with his dad, yeah.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah.
Ah.
We did talk about this on another episode, the submarine.
I think we did, but did we talk about the kid? I didn't remember that.
Yeah, well, we didn't, but yeah, there was a...
See,
that was the crime, that they forced the teenage son to go along.
Definitely a crime.
And he didn't want to. Yeah, definitely.
But no Bascos in the ship,
wasn't.
So we're not allowed to count that as
so
a
that
crime.
Doesn't count. That's not one of our stories today. do you have anything going on this week? Anything happen?
Not really, I
this
don't
This week, think. Last week?
Did I? No. No.
I can't think of... Well, I had a funny thing happen in class the other day. I teach kids, you know, English, and they're about 10. So, like, they find things funny that are just... normal things like women having boobs is funny, right? Like that's something to insult another child about. Like, oh, you have big boobs like a woman.
How old are they? Like
10.
10. Okay,
10.
Okay.
And then they started saying to me, well, you're a woman, right? And I said, well, yeah. And they said, so you must have the ruler. And I took me a minute to realize they were saying I must get my period.
Yes, la regla.
Yeah, because regla is the same word in Spanish as ruler.
Yeah, like a ruler
so
that you measure.
Your period is your regla, and regla is also a ruler. Which
yes.
So you must get your ruler. And I just thought that was pretty funny. That was the funniest thing that happened. Aside from, I was wearing a big puffy white sweater, and they asked me if I came as a sheep today.
I like that one. I like that one.
Yeah, we are in the Basque country, and they love their sheep here. So, it's just trying to fit in, you know. Just trying to fit in.
trying to
look like a sheep.
Trying to pass the
fit in the Basque country.
It'd work, yeah. You gotta climb up a mountain for that, I think.
I do that.
Go jogging in your sheep outfit?
No, not my sheep outfit, I don't. No. That'd be too hot.
That would be hilarious.
Nothing else to report on.
I had a chill week, but I was very stupid at one point during the week. I got my passport in the mail.
Oh.
And I did not understand that was my new passport, because there was two text messages from I'm trying to translate the post office into English. It's the post office.
Yeah.
I took some time to translate that. So I got two messages and they're like, we couldn't deliver this. And I'm like, you couldn't deliver my paper to Barcelona to make my passport? That's what I assumed it was. But no, they were actually saying,
trying to bring it to your house.
Yeah. And I didn't realize. So I got really upset and I got very stressed and I went to Correos.
The post office.
The post office. I bought a new envelope, another stamp, put everything in there, and sent it back to Barcelona.
Well, what do you mean? What did you send back?
All the old paper.
All the paperwork, all the that documents you had already sent.
That I needed to renew my passport, plus the new passport, and I just never even noticed that it was in there. Sent it all back.
Oh my god. So then, they had already sent you your new passport.
Yeah,
that
you were waiting for. I did not realize. I thought it was still trying to get to Barcelona. So
you just assumed there was going to be a problem.
I assumed everybody did everything
wrong. You read
wrong.
All the mail wrong or post all the messages couldn't wrong. Deliver. Oh, they screwed it up.
Yeah, everybody's...
Now I got to do it all over again.
I guess it took like a total of 2 weeks for everything to get done. So it was like way too early for it to be here, right? Like surely they're still
trying
to...
That must be a problem, yeah.
So I realized...
Wow. So you got your passport then?
I mean, it's
on the way to Barcelona.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah,
they'll probably send it back.
I did not realize until the girl called me. So I got to Barcelona. We know that step worked.
Oh, okay. So it did arrive.
She calls me. She's like, so...
Why did you send it back?
Yeah. I was like, looking over your passport and it looks correct. Everything's correct. Like your name's correct, your dates. So why did you send it back? And I'm like, oh, just realizing now that I sent it back. I didn't realize I sent it back.
That's funny.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous. And I'm like...
But you've been waiting on that for a while. Congratulations.
I mean, I'm still nervous.
Yeah,
still,
yeah. Until it gets here. It's not back here yet. You've already sent it away.
It might get lost. It might get... You never know. I'm still really a bit stressed. But it's stupid, yeah. That was my stupid week. Wish me luck.
That is too funny. Just expecting the worst of the postal service
and the
bureaucracy.
And in this case, it's entirely my fault. Like, I made it a bad experience. It was all good. It was just assuming it was bad that was, like, made a bad...
See, that's that negative thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotta be more positive.
Mm. All right. I don't know. Yeah. I have to take more breaths. That's
deep
the lesson.
Meditate this more. Week. Yes. Ay, ay, ay.
That's my mini tragedy.
Well, I put together a quiz for you.
Oh.
If you'd be so kind to participate with this, indulge me.
Let's go
for
it.
This quiz. So I just want to see how well you know your Basque culture.
Oh, grill me. I'm going to get failed.
Don't worry. It's a multiple choice. Well, some of the questions. Not all of them. Well, but I think you'll do pretty good.
The passport I was waiting for was not a Spanish passport, so they're not allowed to kick me out yet.
Okay.
It was just a Brazilian passport.
I see. Okay. Okay, you ready?
I'm prepared. I'm holding on with my chapela.
Okay, so here's this quiz. So, in Basque gastronomy, how many distinctive sauces are there?
I mean...
How many? And then if you can say how many, can you name them? So, think about the Basque sauces.
I mean, I just assumed it was the same as the French sauces, to be honest.
Come on, Douglas. You know this. You know this.
Yeah, like European cuisine, French sauces, that's the rule.
Well, what are those?
Vichyssoise.
No,
mayonnaise.
It's not Basque at all. What are the Basque
not
sauces?
Not that far away. Like, I can just think of just lots of sauces for lots of dishes. Like, there's, I guess you have to count, what's the name of the one for croquetas?
What? Bechamel. That's not a sauce.
Well, it's one of the French sauces, I think. White bechamel sauce.
I guess it's kind of a sauce. But that's not one of them. I can't believe you don't know this. You know this. As soon as I tell you, you're going to be like, oh, of course. Okay, think black.
Yeah, like in chipirones and su cinta.
Good, that's one.
So that's the
black. Salsa tinta. Yeah, the black sauce, the squid sauce.
It's ink sauce for squid. So it's
from nice, squid.
Yeah, it's basically just squid ink and onions.
And tomato.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It gets all black, so I forget about
it. Yeah, and then they put a dollop of the squid ink in it, and it turns it black, which
nice.
Many people are turned off by.
But it's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta try it. It's really good.
Okay, come on. That's one.
And then I'm thinking about the tomato sauce that
yes.
you put with the tuna, but I can't think of the name.
You can put a tuna Bonito. Or cod.
Right. Biscaina.
Yes, that's Biscaina two. Sauce, good.
The red one, yeah.
That's the tomato sauce. And or is it in a red pepper, right? Is it
I guess just both. Tomato? I guess both.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I can't promise. All the best cooks are
and like, then what? Think of a dish that has like clams and
salsa cake. Verde.
Salsa verde, good. Mm. And one more.
So that's basically a parsley based sauce. Very simple.
Yeah, with garlic too, mm-hmm. I think. Yep.
Very nice, very nice.
And olive oil. That's olive oil.
Yep.
And then there's the fourth one.
It's four.
There's four. Yeah, I gave you the answer. And this is also with cod.
Oh, pil pil.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, so, I've never heard it like the
those
four
are the
Basque
four
sauces.
Distinctive.
They're definitely Basque very sauces. Basque. I totally agree with yeah. that. But I've never heard it said that way. That's cute.
Okay. Now the next question too.
Okay.
Which of these English words comes from a Basque word?
Mm-hmm.
Harpoon, luck, biscuit, or anchovy?
Anchovy.
No.
What?
Harpoon.
Really?
Arpoy.
Arpoy. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Harpoon. Yep.
And you're sure anchovy is not of Basque
origin? No. Okay. In fact, I looked into it because I thought too.
Yeah.
And I think it's Galician.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it comes from Galician.
Interesting.
But this, it could be wrong.
It's weird because in
it's
Portuguese.
It's a Google away, people.
Well, I mean, it's. The thing is, in Brazil, people use the Italian words for anchovy.
Mm-hmm.
They say alici.
Because
there's so many Italian immigrants. So I don't really know if anchova is a word in Portuguese or not. I've never heard it. I guess it is. I suppose. It doesn't sound bad, but.
Yeah. But is anchoa. Anchoa is in Spanish or Castilian. Or it's Castilian.
Castilian, yeah.
So I don't. That's not a Basque word. So. Harpoon is actually from a Basque word.
That sounds very cool.
But they were whalers, right? So that makes
very
perfect
appropriate.
Sense, right?
Very historically, very appropriate.
Yeah.
Who needed these? Who was using these harpoons? Actually, it's I think in the beginning of I don't remember when they started like more commercially fishing for whales, but the Basques were some of the first people that were kind of brave enough to hunt them.
Mm.
So
they were just good on the water.
Yeah, but beforehand, like, everybody knew there were whales, but nobody was brave enough to kill them.
It's like, oh, let's get one of those things.
Yeah, like a 20-ton animal.
Yeah.
Mm. So interesting. Very cool.
Okay, ready for question number three?
Mm-hmm.
Which Basque town became the first surfing capital in Europe? Biarritz, Baquio, Mundaka, or Donosti?
Must be Mundaka. Sebastian. Must be Mundaka. No. Really? Baquio.
Biarritz.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is in the French Basque country.
In the northern Basque country, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. It was introduced by American troops during World War II.
Really? That's cool. I mean, Baquio is, I don't like it. I know it's surfery, but the Mundaka, right?
I don't know. Baquio, I don't think it really is. It's kind of a rocky beach.
Yeah, I don't
the
know.
The beach in Baquio.
But Mundaka's famous
Mundaka
for...
is famous for, it's like, they have a certain wave that comes from the left or something.
Exactly.
And they have a lot of competitions there. So.
Yeah. So apparently all the waves in general, they start falling from one side and then they roll to the other side.
Right.
Like, let's say it starts on the left and it rolls over to the right.
Right.
And then Mundaka
is like unusual.
Is the other way around.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like very odd.
Yeah.
So it's very famous for that.
Yeah, it is. Lots of competitions.
Yeah.
Basically, they say there's good waves for surfing.
Yeah. Like, it's another colonial episode of Spain oppressing Basque people, though. It's totally surfing. Because surfing, like, there was nobody surfing whenever they started competitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody surfed in Spain, but there was lots of surfers in the Basque country. So they made an association to compete worldwide.
Okay.
And, you know, because Spain didn't have one, it would count as the Basque country. So what did Spain do? They created an association, put the shittiest people in it that supposedly knew how to surf, and just superseded the Basque country, just to fuck with the Basque country, so that they couldn't have
their own team?
So because there's a Spanish team, then you're not allowed to have a Basque team.
That's the European team or whatever.
But there were no surfers beforehand, so they were just doing it to fuck with the Basques, basically. So, as typical, you know, we're good at something, and these bastards trying to steal it. Just saying. Same old, same old. But there's there's a good long history of Basque surfing.
Yeah.
It's a very cool basking or surfing place. Basking place.
Yeah. Come here to surf, everybody.
Mm, it's very
good
cute.
Waves. Mm. All right. So fourth question. Which Basque town was the hometown of both the first man to successfully circumvent the earth on a boat?
Yes.
And a world-renowned fashion designer? A. Bilbao. B. Lequeitio. C. Bayonne, or D. Getaria?
Can I say Getaria?
Yes!
Ding, 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 ding. Nice. I wasn't sure. I was going for a coastal town.
Yeah.
But not sure. It's kind of small these days, so it's kind of crazy that much stuff happened out of there.
Mm-hmm. So the first one to successfully circumvent the Earth was Juan Sebastian Elcano.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fashion designer, of course, is Cristobal Balenciaga. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
All right.
I think there's a little fashion museum in Italia now. Which must be. Pretty cool. Yeah, I think I've seen images. I don't know if it was a temporary exhibition or if it was more permanent.
They just came out, I think, with a documentary about Balenciaga, which I'm interested to watch.
What was it?
Because a while ago there was a big scandal with him or his house of design, not necessarily him,
right?
But a big scandal because they had put out like an ad campaign with children dressed in like dominatrix outfits.
Interesting.
Or like S&M.
Sure.
Style. Interesting. And like Kim Kardashian had dressed in something in Balenciaga. And then she had to, like, kind of answer why she would wear such a thing. You know, answer for these scandals or whatever.
Oh, man.
So, whatever.
Cancel culture.
Yeah. All right. So, last question, okay?
Let's go.
Okay. So, the Basque Country has the highest per capita concentration of Michelin star restaurants in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How many Michelin stars does Euskadi have?
No idea. Michelin stars, I'm going to guess.
I'll give you options.
Okay.
Would you like some options?
Yeah.
104,
uh-huh.
33,
uh-huh.
71, or 16?
Good mixture there. Let me look at the numbers. Oh, you've got...
I can't give you the answer.
I just wanted to look at them. So, like, it's 174?
104,
4,
33, 71, or 16?
71?
No, 33.
Okay.
But apparently that's the highest per capita.
Yeah, I mean, like, without...
I mean, the Basque Country is pretty small.
Yeah, there's not a lot of... We're just under, what, 2 million, I think?
Yeah.
So, it's not bad for 2 million
people. That's 23 different restaurants that have 33 Michelin stars.
Okay. Like, if you hadn't given me any number, I think I'd be closer to the number.
Yeah, then I confused you with the numbers.
No, I think I was going to go for, like, 25 or 30 or something.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. You did pretty good.
Very cool.
I couldn't believe the sauce one, but then I thought, okay, I just have to, like, jog. You know this one, Douglas. You know the sauce.
Yeah, it's just, like, I never... Because like most of those dishes, they're like one dish, right? There's not a lot of like the chipirones, which is the calamari.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's the dish.
That's the dish. You don't.
It's put, not like that sauce is used. Yeah. In... I mean, I guess you had croquetas made mm-hmm. with that.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's not even functioning as a sauce at that point, right?
No, it's more like it's mixed into the bechamel.
Like, it would work great with pasta, but it's just not a thing they do here.
Oh, I think I have seen pasta with chipirón sauce. I think so.
I mean, I get pasta, black pasta, with chipirón sauce inside it. Yeah. Like, and I get that, but I'm just saying, like, I never thought of it as, like, even
pil-pil. Like a standalone, yeah, like that would go on other things.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, they're very, like, this is what it goes on, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even the biscaina, like, is bacala, or is cod.
Yeah.
Same with the pil-pil, it's cod.
Yeah.
Right?
The one that I think...
Because the pil-pil is made from the meat, the fat. Right? You have to, like,
prepare... It's all olive oil. All olive oil, but then the fat...
But then the fat from the fish, too, that you have to kind of, like, shake out while you're cooking it. You have to, like, put it over the...
Yeah.
The fish is in the pan, and you have to, like, shake the pan to get the fat to come out of the fish.
It's not even fat. To form the sauce. Some other thing that makes that sauce,
The gelatin is, like,
gelatin, some sort of... Yes. That's something more like gelatin, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they do put the pil-pil sauce in a few different pinchos.
Yes. I have seen, like, put it over a pincho with...
But it's usually, with cods. Yeah. Cods. So...
And then maybe there'll be a couple more things on there, but...
That's why I never considered it, like, a sauce.
Yeah. I see what you mean.
Because, like, a béarnaise, you put that on a ton of things.
Mm-hmm.
So...
That is true. That is true.
They're definitely very Basque. But that's very Basque, though, right? Very Basque recipes.
But to also be like, that's the way it is, and there's no...
That's it.
No variation of that.
Yeah. I always remember, I love wearing... I love using bay leaves. I put them in everything, like rice, pasta, just any beans, you know... garbanzos. I just I love that taste, and I just put it in everything. And so I was with my ex and his aunts, and everybody was around, and there's like tons of like bay trees around his grandmother's house. So I snap off a really big branch, like, you know, it wasn't a meter or anything, but let's say 80 centimeters. I know that means nothing for Americans, but like a...
They can figure it out.
An arm's length.
We know what centimeters are.
An arm's length of a branch, you know?
Yeah.
And all the ants are like, what you gonna... Like, there's one recipe you use bay leaves for. You put it in pasta, maybe, and that's it, in this other thing. And I'm like,
are you?
No, I use it in this, and this, and this, and rice, and the beans, and everything. And they thought you were insane. And they're like, nah, nah, nah. In my house, it's for this.
Yeah, that's
very, very. It wasn't classical. A list. It was like one thing. I'm like, okay, well,
that's
hilarious.
Funny.
Very cute.
All right, should we take a break before we get into our stories?
Let's.
All right, well, the first story I have this week is a tractor driver was arrested after seriously injuring a driver during a agricultural protest. There's been all these protests going on, right?
Yes, actually, that's one of my stories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Guardia Civil, you know, the... How do we refer to them? Like the
Civil Guard is the direct translation, but so, they're a national police that works in the whole of Spain.
Yeah. So they arrested a tractor driver in his 60s who was participating in one of these farmers' protests.
Mm-hmm.
He crossed his vehicle on the road to prevent a car from overtaking him.
Mm-hmm.
And the driver of the car was a 35-year-old man from Biscaya.
Mm-hmm.
And he was seriously injured.
Right. So he was trying to block the road or just...
He just... They were all in a line, I guess, a bunch of tractors. Mm. And then a car tried to just go around them.
Kind of break the protest.
And he drove right into the car, the tractor driver.
Right. He's like, you don't break the lines.
Yeah. So this was at 4 p.m., kilometer 92 of the CL 629 as it passes through Burgos in the municipality of Valle de Mena. So the tractor driver was participating in a slow march along with other farmers when he made a sudden maneuver to prevent a car from overtaking him. According to the sources, the tractor crossed the road and collided with the vehicle in which the driver was traveling alone, a resident of Baracaldo,
oh.
who, as a result of the impact, was trapped inside his car.
Okay.
After being released, he was then transferred with serious prognosis in a ICU, well, in an ambulance to the ICU part of the hospital. So the tractor driver has been arrested and accused of the crime of reckless driving. So that's all I have on that. I don't know if where the guy's status is at this point.
Mm-hmm. That was just this week, right? So I guess
he needs this some was time on. This was in. It was the 9th of February.
Mm.
So it was pretty recent.
I wish the family and him recover.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is messed up. It's a shame.
Like, if you're driving something that big, you know you're going to cause some serious damage. A tractor.
Yeah.
Regardless of what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
protest-wise, you know. Still, yeah. You don't just use your big machine to just potentially murder someone, right?
I mean...
He could have really murdered, killed someone, right?
He could have.
Yeah.
I don't think that was intention, clearly. He was just trying to stop him from overtaking the protests.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why he's there. He's not there to cause trouble, like the tractor guy. But then the guy at the back also, it's like, there's a protest, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But still.
I mean...
It is reckless. It's not...
It's just that, like...
It's not thinking it through.
The guy is from Baracaldo. He knows the Basque Country is serious about protests. It's like, so if you're going to break the lines of a protest, you know you're in some risk. I'm not saying physically. I'm saying at least morally you're going to hear some shit, right?
Sure. I mean, you could be yelled at for it.
Yeah.
You could be, belittled for it, but I don't know about having a big tractor driven
to
your moving car.
But then... I'm not just crossing a road in front of some people protesting about X.
I've had to do that.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I mean.
I needed to get across the street and there was a protest going on.
In those cases.
And I had to just kind of weave my way through the people.
Yeah, but the worst is going to happen is somebody's going to scream at you. Not drive a tractor over you, but...
Exactly, yeah.
But if...
Or physically attack you. That would be over the line.
I agree. Of course it's not okay. But that's the thing, I think it's clearly an accident from the point of view of the tractor.
Mm.
Like, as in...
You think it was an accident on his...
No, as in he clearly wanted to block the guy from overtaking.
Yeah.
It's an accident, right? Like, don't think the guy wanted to drive into the tractor either, right? He wanted to get around the tractor.
Yeah.
But both...
No, the tractor made a maneuver to get...
Sure.
In the way of the car.
I get it. But, both of them were... breaking rules. Let's say.
I suppose.
Whether it's a kind of unspoken rule in the case of a protest, please don't break our lines, or whether it's that guy kind of endangering people unnecessarily, the guy in a tractor, right? I think he definitely put people in danger unnecessarily, but I don't think that tractor guy ever had an intention of hurting the guy in the car.
Yeah, but you have to ask, what do you think he thought was going to happen if he collided a tractor with a car?
A
car moving probably a lot faster.
Yeah, I mean, he uses that tractor to work. I don't think he wanted to anybody to hit into it. I think he assumed the car would just stop. I don't know, we don't know the circumstance. We don't know how long he was driving. It was just a few meters. If it was a whole kilometer, he's zooming up the side.
Yeah.
All those things make a big difference.
I suppose.
It's sad that he's in ICU and I really hope he recovers.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah.
You don't... it's just... I would just never do that. Why would you just... I understand.
Maybe he had to go to work.
Yeah, but is there any better excuse than I'm sorry? There's 20 tractors, but tractors. Nobody's if they want
to
fire you.
I was late to a wedding, mm-hmm. once because of a tractor.
Really?
Got stuck behind a tractor.
See,
could not get there.
You didn't try
in
to
time.
Break through. drive around
was,
it.
No, because it was like a 2-lane highway and you just couldn't. Yeah, like, and I was late to a wedding.
That's the thing. The guy also couldn't, right? But he just decided to make it possible.
Yeah, it was in France. And so, like, the tractor could have gone more to the side of the road, though, to let people go around him.
Okay.
Because he was driving his tractor down, like, a pretty speedy highway.
Okay.
Like a, you know, like a highway.
Mm-hmm.
2-lane highway. And he didn't. And there was just a line of cars behind him.
How cute. I'm sure he was very proud of that.
I'm sure he was. He was like, screw you guys.
City people,
you guys are in your hurry.
Use their petrol.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's been a lot of protests lately. If people haven't seen in the news throughout Europe, basically, you know, like about farmers protesting. And in France, they got pretty hardcore.
Yeah, Germany too.
I just remember the footage from the France protests where they were like dumping dirt onto the steps of like the town halls. And
I think it was more like manure.
Yeah, more even better. Yeah, it wasn't. But like messing stuff up, man. Oh, yeah. They were really like causing havoc.
They like to break things.
And I know that like my in-laws sent a video of my nephews. It was like on, what's the name? Campo Volantin, the street. Right there, Universidades. I don't know if it's called Campo Valentin or somewhere along there, right? Like, right in front of the Guggenheim, but the other side of the river, right, from the Guggenheim. And it was all tractors in a row. So I was like, oh, that looks like one of these protests. So I've heard about
that. Yeah, I mean, I haven't left my house much this week, so I've heard, like, beeps, and I knew there was protests around in Bilbao. But I never came across them this week.
I never saw any tractors either.
But I've
around in town.
Yeah, but I've seen a lot of news about Europe just, and yeah, the farmers are not happy at all. Mostly two things that are pushing them to do it. It's, you know, indirectly, I'm not counting this as one of the two things, is inflation that's making everything difficult for everybody. But like, I would say one aspect is Ukraine, that a lot of agricultural products are coming from Ukraine, which, you know, Ukraine was never accepted into the EU before their products were accepted. So all these rules that people need to follow in Europe are not necessarily followed by agriculture in Ukraine. And people here are not happy because it makes their agriculture cheaper in Ukraine, and then they lose out in terms of price. So that's one big problem. And then the other big problem is that the EU is passing a law for the whole EU that is supposed to reduce the amount of carbon in agriculture in general. And that's phasing out a lot of different pesticides and chemicals that you use. It's also phasing out a lot of kinds of fuel that you can use on your tractors. A lot of things that are like
the existing equipment that they're working with.
I think
it would require that you have to like overhaul your whole.
Whether it's what you plant or how you plant, it's changing a lot of those things. So it's both the rules to decarbonize and then Ukraine and the situation with the agriculture and how we, you know, how it, because the EU is basically a tariff barrier for everybody outside of the EU, and that's what's supposed to be attractive. You want to enter the EU so you have access to that market and you can sell within that market. And Ukraine never did that for anything. They just started selling, and they're an enormous country that produces a lot of agriculture. So, you know, that's had a big impact in Europe because it's a very protected kind of market.
No, I remember this, the when the war first broke out, that supermarkets were bare, you know? Lots of products were not available.
I don't remember that particularly, but sure.
You don't?
No, not really, no.
I do.
I believe you.
I remember seeing, like, just whole shelves were, you know, flour and rice and different products, yeah, that were just, like, unavailable.
It's probably for panic buying in that case, I would say. Because, you know, like, there's not much rice produced in Ukraine, but I guess everybody was
just, I don't know. I've said rice, but, I mean, I think it was, there was just, I remember there being a lot of, because I knew they'd put out a lot of grain, like, a lot of grain
products. A lot of flour.
So, I did notice that when the war first broke out.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it was panic buying, I don't know.
All of those things, whether you're just changing where deliveries come through, you know, because in the beginning of the war, the Black Sea was totally
closed. Yeah, they weren't allowed, they couldn't export anything for a while. So a lot of the stuff we got from there just wasn't there.
That's the thing, because we didn't really get that much originally. You know, we didn't. That's the point. The point is we didn't get...
I thought we did.
All of that was going to export markets, usually. But it's one global market, so...
Yeah.
So most of the grain from Ukraine went to, like, Africa and Middle East. But Middle East, for example, has a lot of money. They don't care that Ukraine's not selling. They just buy it in the United States or Brazil. But that's where the EU was buying. So then there's competition for who's going to get the grain from Brazil or from the US. See what I mean? So then just that 1 or 2 months of shit, we're not going to get grain from Ukraine anymore. And then let's say, you know, Saudi and Dubai start buying from the US, and then the EU is like, no, we want it. And it's like, yeah, but I've already sold to the UAE, so you're going to take a month until we send you a ship. And it's like that, just that reorganization might have had...
something to do with it,
Yeah, something to do with the lack shortage, of some sort of shortages. But, I mean, the thing is, like, because Ukraine was not inside the EU before, it never had a right to export their agriculture without paying taxes. And that's what happened after the war. The EU, as a kind of support, said, just bring all your agriculture products through the EU with no regard to taxes. Don't worry, just come through, sell it to us, whatever. And sure, that was very helpful in the beginning, but now it's, you know, been 2 years. And after 2 years of just throwing up the rules, and as I was highlighting in the beginning, not enforcing a lot of rules that we enforce here, which is like, you know, no pesticide, making sure there's like nature paths and it's correctly kind of managed, you know, not only for agriculture, but also for nature, taking care about, you know, no pesticides going into water and all those rules that European farmers have to follow in the EU, but are not a rule necessarily in Ukraine. So that's one of the big issues with Ukraine, is that they're not, they don't have to follow the rule, but they can, right now, they can sell all their products into the EU. That's their big complaint. Where it's not a small country. It's a country that I think was producing about 40% of global wheat, 40% of all global wheat. So, you know, it's a very weighty market in that way. So it kind of overwhelms Europe in some instances, like, I guess, meat and flour and things, some basics like that. But, you know, it's a whole complex system. Everything's connected. So, you know, usually farms produce a lot of things. So maybe, sure, they can suffer for a bit without, you know, getting as much money for X or Y. But then that's the thing, where at 2 years, it becomes more of a systemic problem, right? Especially when you're trying to get in these new rules. You're like, hey, 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 wait a minute. So now we got to suffer because of the prices that are way lower because of Ukrainian products coming into the EU market. And you want to change all the rules and make it harder for us? You know what I mean? That's the real outrage of the farmers. If would you agree with that? If you, is this what you've felt reading and hearing things, or did you get a different impression?
I got the impression that that they weren't being, I guess, not appreciated for
money,
right? And that being like being low barred priced and. And they weren't it wasn't sustainable for them. So they're protesting that, and that the unions weren't stepping up to defend them.
It seems like it,
And so they took it upon themselves, just like, well, then we'll protest, and we'll stop working, or we'll just go protest or go give our demands to whatever, the Basque government or the local governments.
So this takes us into my story, right? The one, it was outside of, it was in Gipuzkoa, my story. And it was, we were speaking about farmers' protests against the grave situation in the agricultural sector, was the title. And they were asking for better prices and less bureaucracy. That was their motto. And a number of tractors. This is a different protest than the one you were talking about with the accident.
Yeah, this one was in Burgos, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so this one is in Gipuzkoa, and there were no accidents. We were just mentioning the actual protest. But, you know, that's what they're asking for, better prices.
Mm.
And I was saying that's very much influenced by EU Ukraine.
Mm.
And, well, also the EU, because they let the Ukrainian products in.
Yeah.
Which I'm all in favor for, but you also have to think about it. You know, it's been 2 years. Maybe we've got to reorganize this situation, right?
Yeah.
And, but also there's systemic problems. Like, for years we've been hearing that supermarkets have too much buying power and they can force down the prices. And that's more of a systemic problem, but, you know, nothing changed from 10 years to today. It's still problematic for most farmers to deal with
farmers
supermarkets.
Farmers have been struggling for a long time, yeah.
But everywhere. What changed in the last year or so are these two things. It's more like Ukraine and then the decarbonization laws.
Yeah, the changing, yeah.
Coming through the EU. And, well, this is, you know, my story is just this protest. There were 120 tractors going from Andoain and Sarauz into the Gipuzkoan government, the Diputación Foral de Gipuzkoa, so going there to ask for those things. And to be honest, most of the responses were pretty good that I was what I was reading. You know, the Basque government was saying, as a kind of initial measure, they're going to try and reduce some of the taxes that people in agriculture have to pay, so that makes it easier on them that way. And they are conscious of those problems, so they are, you know, at least they're saying, because, you know, we're this same week that these protests are happening, so I think there's still a lot of possibility of talk.
Yeah.
And at least from this news piece in ETB, which is the Basque main public media company, guess. I always say it's like the BBC for the Basque Country, right?
Yeah.
It's just the easiest way
to
explain it. I guess NPR would be
that's
sort
national.
Of equivalent.
Yeah.
But, you know, so is ETB national inside the Basque Country.
Right.
Taylor.
No, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that's what it stands for. National Public Radio.
Oh, NPR.
Publicly funded.
Right. Yes. It's Euskadi Irratia and Televista for ETB.
Okay.
So radio, Basque radio and television is the NPR sort of letter equivalent.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think it matters to talk about the name of the lady in charge of, you know, government.
Nah.
But she basically was saying, we're listening, we're talking to people in agriculture, and we hope to resolve all those things. And then there was another one in Navarre.
Oh, you have another story?
No, they were just mentioning it, that last Friday. There was an agreement between the farmers in Navarre.
Oh yeah,
about just talking. I think they're just talking.
They're at the table.
They're at the table. Mm. So we, like at most places in
so
Europe,
they're able to get. So these protests have had, the outcome has been that they're
negotiating.
Yeah,
at least
getting some negotiation
in a Basque Country. That's the stage we're at.
Yeah,
that's the stage we're at. You know, like I guess.
Yeah.
I guess I've heard more about French situation and the German situation.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're talking about talking, but they're not really talking yet.
Yeah.
So, some good news from the Basque Country. I mean, it just sounds nice you know, I don't know if reality, they're actually
maybe it doesn't
negotiating anything.
They're like, here we go again, It's all talk and no, no go.
Yeah, I have more hope. You know, for the Basque countries, because, you know,
this is a small scale too,
way smaller scale, and the Basque country is way more flexible in terms of money. They have so much more ownership over their own money. They they can just decide to spend it here or there. So it's easier for them to reallocate and say, okay, this is an emergency, we need the money for this. Whereas, you know, if we were talking about Cantabria and a nearby province, the only thing they can do is ask Madrid for things. They can't really decide. They could cancel some thing project that they have going on and reallocate that money, maybe, but you know, they have a lot less flexibility. And within a Basque country, more than the Basque country having that autonomy, Guipuscoa has that autonomy, Biscaya has that autonomy, and Alaba has that autonomy entirely by their own ways. So we could even, which is why I guess it's interesting to talk about Navarre, to talk about Guipuscoa in a way separately, because they actually all have different solutions to those problems, and they all have the ability to find different solutions. So I think it's kind of it's a nice representation of how maybe smaller communities are able to manage their problems better if they have enough independence and enough autonomy, which the Basque country does in general. I mean, I always want more autonomy, but here is a clear case where we can see that the autonomy is at least giving it more flexibility in the short run. So good things, keep going. I hope they work them out. I mean, it's a very systemic...
We'll keep you posted, people, what happens.
It's a systemic...
Or not. We'll forget and we won't, but... We'll try.
When there are problems.
Whether or not there's been some...
We're going to realize. Yeah, we're going to talk about them.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
But like both those situations, it all goes through the EU. So without the EU doing something and trying to resolve the problem, we can't really, you know, the Basque country has not that much autonomy.
Right, yeah.
It can't put taxes on, the EU, on Ukrainian food, and it can't, you know, change the decarbonization.
Right.
Rules. So within this context, it has some maneuvering.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we have to solve the situation in Europe in general. It can't be just solved here. And it's, difficult.
Should we take a break before we get to the next story?
Let's do that.
Okay.
See you guys in a minute. Yep, we're back.
We're back. Okay. What are we drinking tonight?
I know we it slipped our minds to mention it in the intro. We can cut that out. I mean, what?
We just went over this.
Does it matter?
Okay. No, it doesn't matter. That's what I was saying. And then,
so what are we drinking tonight, Julie?
We're drinking. I'm having a red wine. It's a Reserva. It's called Edera.
Edera, beautiful.
Which is a Basque name.
It just means beautiful.
Oh, it means beautiful.
Yep.
Didn't know that. Look at that. Learning something new. Edera. Okay. So it's a Reserva.
Yes.
It's from the bodegas...
Bilbainas,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's bottled in
Aro. H-A-R-O.
Which is like on the border with Alava and the Rioja.
Yes.
So it's a lovely red wine. It's lovely.
It is. It's nice... lovely. It's lovely. It's on the Ebro River.
Yes.
There's a cute fact about Aro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not quite Basque, but...
Tell us all about it.
It's named after Faro.
Oh, lighthouse.
A lighthouse, exactly. And it does not make sense today, but it actually was navigable up until Aro. That was the last place you could navigate to by
on the river.
Yeah. Today, it's like not that full at all, because all the forests around have been decimated. So the river is just way less than what it used to be.
Okay.
But in Roman times, when there was a forest all over the peninsula,
That was the light. That
it was the
follow.
Last lighthouse. It was the last lighthouse on the Ebro.
Oh, look at that.
Isn't that cute?
That is very cute.
Yeah. And it just, it sounds so much like Fado, right? Ado. Mm-hmm. It's still mm-hmm. very close to recognize.
Totally, yeah.
So I think it's very cute.
Huh.
It never left me. When I went there, they told us, yeah, so I'm drinking La Salve.
Which we talked about, yeah.
Which, in a way, is the lighthouse of the sailors when they come into Bilbao.
Right? That's right.
Because it's the welcome home bridge.
Yep.
And so, and you're drinking this wine from Fado.
Look at that.
That's us.
Cheers.
That's us. Cheers, everybody. We did cheers in the beginning. We didn't talk what we were drinking.
We just never mentioned what we were drinking.
It's delish, though, guys. Delish.
Yes.
All delish.
All around. So try that wine, if you will. It's good stuff.
It's good stuff.
All right. My next story, this one is out of the United States.
Okay.
So this was the headline is, marijuana dispute led to desert massacre in San Bernardino that killed 6.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Is this a mini crime time?
Yeah, this is headlines.
Oh, sorry, not a mini crime, it's a cheeky
It's not mini crime time, it's cheeky soap. So these
it
can
feels
be serious
too important.
Crimes.
Yeah,
these
it feels
can be
too
serious
important.
Crimes. Five men have been arrested in a gruesome multiple slaying in the remote part of the Mojave Desert in San Bernardino County. 6 men were fatally shot. By the way, my grandfather lived in San Bernardino County. Mm. He lived in Riverside.
You have connections to the Basque Country. Is that the side that goes to the Basque
Country? No, they weren't over to Mexico and then came into the States from Mexico.
Okay.
My ancestors from the Basque Country.
Uh-huh.
So, and then, of course, they went into Arizona and then into California where my father was born in California.
Is that where this is happening?
San Bernardino County.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
My father was born in L.A. County.
Okay.
In Whittier.
It sounds close. I don't know. I don't know their geography down
there. No, it's a further north.
Okay.
So, 6 men were fatally shot. 4 of them were also severely burned in Tuesday's incident, authorities say. So, Tuesday. This was on January 29th.
Mm.
So, their bodies were left scattered amid the desert landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Writing by the person that wrote this.
Dramatic, yeah.
So the motive behind the violence was a dispute over marijuana, investigators say. Possible connections to cartel activity are being explored.
Interesting.
Investigators arrested Toniel Baiz Durante, 34. Mateo Baiz Durante,
mm-hmm.
24. So I'm assuming they're brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And our Bascos
mm-hmm.
is Jose Nicolas Hernandez Sarabia.
Sarabia.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
33.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose Gregorio Hernandez Sarabia.
Mm-hmm.
34.
With an S.
So other brothers.
Interesting.
Well, Sarabia is the surname of Ramon's friend and my friend,
mm-hmm.
Ander.
I've never heard of it.
Hey, Ander.
Interesting one.
Yep, and you got some descendants over there killing people.
Well, didn't
then,
they die?
Well, they've been arrested.
Oh,
no, those ones
killers.
Have been arrested.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh.
And then Jose Manuel Burgos Parra, 26.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the people that were arrested for this. On Tuesday at 8:16 p.m., dispatchers received a 911 call, according to Michael Warwick, a sergeant in the Specialized Investigation Division for the Sheriff's Department. The caller, speaking in Spanish, told dispatchers he was shot. But he did not know the location he was at, and it appeared the call ended.
Oh, man. Dramatic.
Yeah. Dispatchers tracked the coordinates of the phone call to an area near Lessing Avenue and Shadow Mountain Road off U.S. Highway 395.
Shadow Mountain Road. That
yeah,
seems dodgy.
Right?
I died in Shadow Mountain Road.
So this highway runs along Interstate 15. Which is an interstate that runs the whole length of California.
Way less sexier name. They have to rename it.
Well,
Shadow
it's an interstate
highway.
Versus the highway.
Yeah.
So this was occurred on the highway. So with the assistance of the California Highway Patrol Air Operations Unit, officers discovered a crime scene with multiple shooting victims in 2 vehicles, a Dodge Caravan and a Chevy Trailblazer. One of the vehicles was pocked with bullet holes. The desolate area surrounding the crime scene, about 50 miles northeast of Los Angeles, was littered with cardboard, rubber tires, and broken bottles. About an hour later, deputies from the Sheriff's Victory Valerie Station arrived and found four slain men with severe burns, a fifth deceased in the Chevy Trailblazer, and a sixth deceased victim a short distance away. Four of the six men have been identified. The name of one 45-year-old man is being withheld pending a next of kin notification. The last two victims have yet to be identified. So, those that have been identified are Baldemar. Mm-hmm. That's his first name. Baldemar Mondragon.
Oh.
Another Basque name.
Yeah,
yeah. Albarran.
It's clearly.
Another Basque name, like no? So his two like surnames it. Are Basco.
Although, starting with Al, it could be Arabic as well. We're not sure.
Albarran.
But Aran is the valley, so it could be.
Yeah, Mondragon is definitely. Mm-hmm. And then Franklin Noel Bonilla and Kevin Dariel Bonilla. Mm-hmm. Lots of siblings here.
Yeah, family.
Lots of siblings mm-hmm. involved. Warwick and Franklin Bonilla was the person who called for help. Oh, no, Warwick said that was the police chief or whatever, the sergeant. He okay. said that Franklin Bonilla was the one who called for 911 for help. So, yeah, they are... All the victims sustained fatal gunshot injuries. And then it is believed four of the men were burned by the suspects at the location.
Oh, my gosh.
So, asked whether the slayings could be cartel-related, Warwick said that he couldn't yet comment, but there were certain, quote, certain things at the scene that show a level of violence that mm. obviously raises some interesting questions for us.
Mm.
The five suspects were arrested on Sunday on suspicion of murder and being held without bail, pending review of the case by the San Bernardino County District Attorney's Office. Mm. Illegal marijuana grows are an issue in the area, so recreational marijuana and registered marijuana grows are legal in California, but the marijuana black market is still a cause mm-hmm. of violence.
Yeah.
So that was that story. Look at that. Mm. Look at all the Bascos in that one. Both victims and
yeah, perpetrators. Mm. It's a hard one. You would have thought... Like, legalizing marijuana would have helped a lot with that. I think it must have helped somewhat, but clearly not enough.
Right, because, I mean, I guess if you want to go black market, you don't want to go through all the loopholes of having the official business, and then having, maybe you don't have the legal status or the business...
Acumen. Trust. One of the biggest problems...
I mean, it's a pretty big market, right? So, like, it must be hard to get into and make a profit, if you will. So the black market is probably still quite profitable.
The problem I've heard most from California, specifically, is state by state. But in California, I hear there's a lot of red tape for you to be legal.
Oh, for sure, yeah. That's what I think people don't want to go.
Yeah, but apart from the red tape, it's the cost. Like, it mm-hmm. costs taxes a lot to pay for...
Mm-hmm. Business licensing and...
But not only licensing, because that sounds like an easier one, but it's like, you know, there's all the like, one of the most egregious problems that I've heard from marijuana growers is that you have to get these very, very strict tests to make sure that you don't have any pesticides. Mm. But basically, they make you make, I don't know... how many tests, but like it's like thousands of dollars just to get these tests
done. Yeah,
and basically the tests are so good that any air transports pesticides from kilometers away. So they don't even use it at all, but it keeps having positives, so they have to put it in a closed hangar.
Yeah.
With no air coming from outside.
Yeah, the costs involved of doing it legally are probably astronomical.
But it's absurd because they're basically admitting that if you just grow a thing outside in the air, it's going to be contaminated with pesticides.
And you're not going to pass the... Yeah.
But you see how it's a little bit too strict?
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's obvious that you're going to have problems if you're so freaking strict that you couldn't plant a flower outside your house without it not having pesticides land on it.
Yeah.
In California, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, airborne. It's all airborne, yeah.
I mean, it's just the requirements are absurd, is what I'm saying, to some level. Like, that level, that's absurd. And then, you know, whether it takes $1 million for you to set up a small growing business. I'm sorry, but a lot of people just don't have that initial.
No.
And so just, it's so startup obvious. Fee, yeah. It's just so obvious that you're not going to go through these loopholes, right?
Right. It's easier not to.
And like, when I think about...
Although you may get murdered.
I know.
That's the risk you take.
It's not
as... There's risks involved either big way. Risks.
But that's
monetary
clearly,
or
yeah, like this is not
otherwise.
This is not a 2 kilo thing though, right? This is clearly business.
It seems
business.
Like a big deal, yeah.
Yeah,
like
for six people to die.
Yeah, I mean this seems pretty heavy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I just think back to before legalization, where one of the biggest arguments was, well, at least for me morally, was that it was clearly a racist. Initially racist policy against black people who used marijuana in the 20s and 30s, and they prohibited it specifically to go after black people.
Mm.
African Americans were overwhelmingly put in jail, and supposedly this was a way to kind of just stop persecuting African Americans for this kind of, you know, this kind of activity. And then supposedly giving them an opportunity to live off of that, because that would be very fair. And then if you ask any African American to put up $1 million first, it kind of defeats the purpose.
Right, like things that
people just
are
don't
made
have access to that amount of
right,
credit.
Right, it's about access and they're, opportunity and
they're
yeah.
marginalized people who have in general.
Yeah.
Who
don't have access to bank loans and.
Yeah, like the whole
business
point.
And, yeah,
the whole point of legalizing was to redress this kind of very racist kind of initial
imprisonment. And,
yeah, persecution.
Yeah,
and like when I think about,
and then it just kind of cuts them out of the whole
the legal system, basically.
Yeah, or even just being part of it, like to make something out of it, or I.
It's like apart from.
I don't want to sound like we're saying that black people. I don't know.
The thing is, like when I look at a lot of Native American communities that are dealing with very very very, and I'm both Native African American and Native American communities deal with a lot of like systemic trauma.
And yeah.
Like hundreds of years of.
Institutionalized
of
racism.
Problems,
yeah.
Yeah, and of persecution, and of
yeah.
their, in the case of Native Americans, their language taken away.
Yeah.
They're kind of almost feeling like, not almost, very much feeling like second-class citizens. And so, just like drugs and marijuana specifically, are just a way to deal with the trauma. You know, nevertheless, make a living, just survive.
Mm-hmm.
Like marijuana is a great like help for. I think it's more like ayahuasca trips and stuff that are talked about in Native American communities. But you can
well,
see
that's more South American. But it'd be like peyote.
Peyote, that's the one. That's the one that I'm thinking about more. Yeah,
like it's part of a spiritual ritual.
But you can see the same thing happening in African American communities where. You are in a very persecuted community and, you know, that's the psychological help. Like, a lot of marijuana prescription is psychological, right? So, so apart from giving, like, a criminal record to that community, apart from, like, taking them away from their families, you know, it's just so many problems that are just... not resolved by having these high barriers of entry.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it makes, you know...
It's another barrier.
Yeah. Where is there, for example, there's like...
That they already have a million other barriers.
Yeah, yeah.
To overcome.
It's just like there's better examples, you know, like I think Vancouver is pretty chill. Like, they, you know, I don't think it's that hard. Or there's, I don't remember where, but there's, I remember one of the, it was a U.S. state, but they basically, the system is kind of industrialized that way. It is very high cost to be able to plant and produce marijuana. But at least all this tax is gathered by the government and used for those communities, for, like, say, education and African-American kind of, like...
And now I don't know what you're talking about.
It's just that I'm just saying, you can either let small producers plant marijuana, or you can let big companies, like, let's say, a couple of companies plant marijuana and have high costs, but then you charge them the taxes and use it for good things. That's what I'm saying. Mm. Like, as long as the tax is destined specifically for, let's say, drug rehabilitation, people that are...
Is that happening anywhere?
Homeless. Yeah, there's one state that does that specifically. I forget which one. It feels like something...
I don't know. Listeners, tell us. Somewhere we don't know, obviously.
Could be Canada, but I don't think so. I don't think so, though. Could be. But it's like the good systems...
I've never heard of that in the States.
There's bad systems. And I totally agree that California is not a good system. Like, in terms of dealing with how to legalize marijuana. So I'm not surprised.
And another problem I've heard about the legalized marijuana is that it's like a cash, it's a cash, how do you call that? Cash only business, right?
Well,
because banks don't want to
I think that's
be involved with it.
But I think that was solved by Biden, because I think he legalized it federally, or at least that was a talk.
I don't think so.
But that was a talk.
I think it's still ongoing.
When Biden came in.
Yeah, I can see it being like a talking point, but maybe nothing moving.
I haven't been following that closely.
We don't know.
But I believe
that
issue should be going away if it hasn't just recently been dealt with. That's my impression. Although, yeah, as you say, I'm not sure.
Should look into it. Anyway.
Very sad, very sad.
Yeah.
So...
All right, so I got another one from the States, okay?
Okay, let's try this.
So this is an older story, but I found it searching for Basque surname. So it's pretty old. It's from 2015. That's pretty old.
I mean,
that's almost 10 years ago. Can you believe that? Almost 10 years ago, 2015.
We're young sprites. That's what we are.
But I just found it so funny.
Okay.
So, 6 arrested in series of Southern Nevada police car rammings.
Okay.
So,
that sounds ridiculous.
Las Vegas police officers say 6 people have been arrested after several law enforcement vehicles were intentionally rammed with stolen cars over the past few months.
I love their police cars.
They were stealing cars and then just ramming into police cars.
Sounds like a total teenager thing.
I know, right? Authorities say they identified the suspects on Friday and found stolen guns, motorcycles, and vehicles when they served search warrants at 6 locations in Southern Nevada. Police have been investigating since April 29th, and this story came out in August. When a federal Department of the Interior K-9 vehicle was rammed by and a nearby home was damaged. 3 similar instances happened in June and July, but officers have been unable to catch up with the suspects. The 6 suspects face about 100 felony charges combined. They've been identified as Hugo Carabal? How would you say that one with the J in there?
Carvajal.
Carvajal.
Yeah.
Carvajal. Francis Carvajal. Two brothers again.
My God. Family link.
I know. These brothers working together. Edgar Medina, Ivan Gonzalez, and Abel Itzalde.
Ooh,
there's our
very
Basque.
Basque. Very
there's
Basque.
Our Basque.
Yeah.
And James Farran. James.
F-A-R-A-N. Farran.
Farran.
Okay.
Farran.
I've never heard that. I don't know where that's from.
I don't either. So this is just the one white guy.
James Farran.
This game. But I just thought that was a funny story. That's all I've got on that.
It's
but
a good one. I like it.
Thought it was pretty funny that they were stealing cars and then just
ramming into.
Not taking them to make money off them. They were just using them to fuck with the police.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
It's hilarious. It's 2015, so there was no... It's a different context.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
What were they angry about then?
Did they want... Well, there's always something to be mad about, right?
Maybe they wanted legalization of marijuana. Yeah. Look what that got them.
Yeah.
More, well, I mean, just saying. It was not the best solution, I'm afraid.
Do you have a story for us?
I do. I have a last one about, again, in Basque Country, back to Basque Country. Mm-hmm. It's funny, usually I'm the one going away
abroad,
from Basque Country,
yeah. Right?
And you're the one. Yes, my story is just a short one. It was that this week there was a cyber attack on the Navarre government webpage. And we know a little bit about it. It's pro-Russian activists that are attacking the Basque, the Navarre webpage. And yes, they know they're pro-Russian. I mean, it's interesting because when I read it, I was like, you know, the Basque Country is one of the most pro-Russian. You know, they're just very skeptical about the situation. I don't think they're like against Ukraine or anything, but you know, Russia has a big foot in the Basque Country. Like, it gives money to nationalist parties. Like, it's under the covers. Yeah. It's under the covers, so nobody likes to recognize it. But they also get into the media and they get their stories, their point of view across. They totally
really
do. They totally do. And Vox, like they found.
Well, that I can believe.
They say Vox was founded with a big chunk of
Russian
of
money.
Russian money. Yeah, that's a very far right.
Is that conspiracy or is that for sure?
No, it's been proven. What I mean to say is, I don't know if it was like fundamental or if it was just a big help. But we know there was money. I just don't know how much it was. I don't know if it was like 20% or 80% of Vox's money in the beginning, something like that.
Well, Vox, if you don't know, is the
very far right,
mm-hmm. anti-immigration, anti-gay,
yeah, a lot of things.
Very, yeah.
They don't like anybody trans. They don't like,
yeah.
They don't like fun.
I guess conservative, ultra conservative, if you will.
Uh huh. They don't like Basques. They don't like anything.
Yeah.
They don't like Catalan people.
Yeah.
And I love the name of the attacker. They have a name of the attacker.
So what happened? Did it break down the, like, what happened?
You just couldn't access the Navarre website for a day or two.
That's it?
Nothing grants.
Nothing happened as a result? Like, they didn't...
No, that's it. It's back up and running.
Okay.
It's back up and running. And the name of the hacktivist group was... I love the name.
Okay.
Ready? No name... 057. In parenthesis 16. That's the name of their group.
And then in parentheses 60.
16. The whole thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, no name 057 in parentheses 16.
That's the name of the hacktivist group. Very creative. We can see our very artistic Russian friends.
That sounds, yeah.
Basically, that's it.
Sounds like, what are some English words?
Yeah.
For anonymous, no name.
Yeah.
And then just put a number on it to make it sound legit.
Yeah, and then it's
and then it,
so
and
ridiculous.
And then put a number 16 in parentheses to like throw them off. Like,
why?
What is the 16?
Why the 16? Are we really
we're mysterious?
Do we really believe there's another 15 groups called
yeah,
no
they're
name?
Only, yeah, 057? They're number 16 of the groups. Yeah. Where we've been assigned to the Basque Country or something.
But maybe, wait, maybe
or
we're...
Nevada.
Maybe we're just innocent and then, like, 057 is, like, the country code. I don't think it is the country code, but it could be, like, right? It could
of
be,
what?
Like, Russia.
Russia? I don't know, is it?
I think it's...
Look it up.
I think it's 02 or something. Not that
what
at
is
all.
The country code of Russia?
Let's check. This is our piece of useless information for the week.
Yeah. Everybody is going to find out what the country code for Russia is.
To phone all these people.
Phone country code.
07, I remember that.
007.
007.
007.
Yeah. Isn't that ironic?
Quite.
Because 007
spy.
Always fought against Russia. The old,
that
good
is
old days.
Funny.
I know, it's hilarious. Maybe they chose it just to fuck Russia.
I bet you they did.
I don't know the history
I
behind that.
I don't think
that.
That's a mistake.
But I remember
that
learning
he's
that.
Agent 007.
Yeah. So, like, there I guess...
There you go. That's pretty funny.
I guess the opposite, because the country code for the U.S. is 001.
Yeah.
So I guess the superhero agent in Russia would be called 001, right? Like, that would be the revenge.
Yeah. Maybe they have a series of films that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Where there's a special agent, 001.
It never works out.
Who drinks vodka all martinis. The time. Vodka martinis.
He's just drunk all the whole time. Like, how's the revolt going? Fine. It's going fine. No, I can't do the accent.
You don't have a good Russian accent.
I don't think I do. I'm sorry.
I'm not even going to try. Not at this point.
You're not going to try. Well, that was my cyber attack story.
Okay. All right. Here's my last story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, two people were arrested.
Special effects.
Slashing.
Let's go.
For slashing the tires of 46 ambulances in Bilbao.
What?
Yes.
What dickheads?
Yes.
Sorry for my language.
Yes. Don't need to apologize. We can say whatever we want.
I mean, yeah.
We're under the explicit.
It says explicit
in our podcast, so we can say whatever we want.
We are.
This Thursday. So this happened. No, this isn't this Thursday. This happened on the 1st of February. So
okay.
When this story came out, it was this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
The Ochanja arrested two men, aged 36 and 49, accused of causing various damage,
mm-hmm.
to 46 ambulances on November 15th. So this was at this company, the Concessionaire Company.
Okay.
Group Le Pau. I feel like that's French, right? Concessionaire is French, no?
Concessionaire Company Group, yeah.
Group Le Pau.
Le Pau, yeah.
Le Pau. And this was in the Bilbao neighborhood of Sorosa.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a private company.
Yeah.
Right. Because the ambulances are subcontracted.
It seems like it.
By the healthcare.
It looks like it. I never knew about this.
I did know today. That, actually. Mm-hmm. I did know that, but yeah.
So do you know if they're all subcontracted or just most?
Yes, I believe all ambulances are private subcontracted companies.
Right. Because there's one, there's, I think, the most.
I believe so. Do not quote me on that because. Well, I haven't done the homework.
We're not sure. But I definitely know that I've seen a number of ambulance companies, like DYA, I think.
Yes, is exactly. One of the
famous ones.
Yeah.
But they're kind of like a very, like, I think you can donate to them. So they're like a very publicly funded. They're not like a private company or anything. Like, it's an organization.
Well, I mean, all of these are paid for by the Osaki Decha, which is the
Ask health service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they could all be private companies.
I mean, I think DYA specifically...
Yeah, I'm not sure. You're right. I don't know.
Is because you can donate to them. I've seen options to donate to them.
Okay, because maybe they places. Do need... Okay.
So I know that one is... Sure, maybe they still get paid by the Basque
government. If anybody ever wrote us an email, somebody could correct us on this. But,
for sure.
But nobody writes us emails.
So at the moment, we're always right, Julie.
Yeah, exactly. So right. As long as you guys just let us spread these things about the Basque country.
Well, we're not
without
categorically
correction.
Saying it.
No, we don't know for sure. But anyway. So three more men have been investigated after the investigation started.
Mm-hmm.
So the damage has been valued at 11,000 euros. It consisted of several dozen tires being punctured, which caused the vehicles to become unusable for several hours.
Mm-hmm.
Since the labor conflict began, so it's as a result of some protests within mm-hmm. the healthcare system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in the medical transport sector. Mm-hmm. Last September, more than 200 ambulances have been sabotaged with an amount of more than 300,000 euros in damages, which is why the Archina continues to, with these investigations, is not and does not rule out the possibility of other arrests. In relation to this conflict, the company Le Pou, you said?
Pou?
Pou. Pou? Report, isn't that Pou, like the town?
Yep.
In France? Yep. It's near, it's in the French
Not
Basque,
too far. Right? No, it's not, I don't think it's in, it's just outside of the Basque French part. Okay. Pou. Just north of it, yep.
Which is a really cute town, you guys. Been to Pou, have you been to Pou?
I haven't.
So cute.
Is it?
Super
Sounds
cute.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So many French little towns are gorgeous.
I know, they're so cute. Just adorable.
They really are.
So that since then, the company Le Pou reported earlier this year that an ambulance from Guernica suffered punctured wheels and broken windows when it went to transport a 71-year-old patient in cardiorespiratory arrest, whom a doctor was performing cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, maneuvers, and he finally died. And they didn't get him to the hospital in time as a result. So that's a little added on, like, look at, this is causing people to
die.
That's
really horrible.
Right?
Yeah.
So apparently this is kind of like a vigilante sabotage to protest against certain things that this, the Osakidecha, or the,
Pascal service.
Yeah, the health service wants to, or the people that work within that service want to remedy, right? Like, it's, so it's part of that, because there's been protests.
Yeah, I mean,
within that. Like, there's been a lot of problems after COVID.
Yeah. So
things just got worse, and so I mean, it got really overrun and really overwhelmed, and yeah. And then more and more, it sounds like they're privatizing the services, right?
I mean, my story, I'll just mix it in with yours, because it's kind of a similar vibe.
Okay.
It's basically just speaking about protests that happened between the 8th and the 21st of January. 15 days, and it's those health transport sector, they all went on the union, so the unions all went on strike and asked for the strike, but it's against those companies who are
private
doing
companies.
Health transport, yeah.
Yeah.
And they, what they're asking for is for all of the health transport to just be taken over by the Basque health system, Osakidetza.
Yeah.
They just want that to become a public thing.
Yeah.
It has been, as you say, has been private for a long time.
Yeah.
Or
especially
at least
the ambulance, like the transport.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I've heard that, the transport specifically has always been kind of an outside job.
Yeah. I always remember seeing DYA and then other ones, and I'm like, why don't they deal with it from a centralized way? I never understood.
Me neither.
I thought maybe some was like for elderly people that are already in a home, but no, it's just emergencies. DYA also goes to emergencies and accidents. So I don't quite
get. Ambulances have a really long history. It's like a weird history.
It might,
like, hospitals didn't. I remember hearing a story about when they first started in the States too, that it was just kind of like a grassroots thing to get an ambulance service. And that's when ambulances started.
Okay, I don't know.
The idea of having a car that could just get you to the hospital really fast with people inside that knew how to kind of keep you alive until you got to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sounds pretty recent. I mean, we barely have hospitals.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that recent. It was like within the last, like, I guess the last century.
Yes,
but
still feels
pretty
recent,
yeah,
feels
in terms of human history. But so it's kind of weird, like the whole ambulance thing has always been kind of a separate section.
Like in the UK, like where I've lived for 5 or 6 years, like it's just part of the health system, and it's free. It's just dealt by the NHS, the National Health Service. So,
right,
you know, there's no business with private companies. So I've no idea. Like
when did it start?
No idea.
And how did it start, you know?
Like, clearly the UK, when they dealt with the NHS, I guess they just were like, okay, let's just add this service too. But maybe it was like, as you say, like something
like
previous.
People just saw that, like, people were dying on the way to the hospital, or like you had to get there in order to get helped.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's why the DYA thing
feels... Because even in the NHS, like, when did that start? Yeah. When did it become a government-run...
Yeah, I guess after the Second World War,
yeah, maybe? So that's not that...
Not too long ago, no.
Right?
No, yeah.
So before that...
But the DYA setup...
There were hospitals before that, but, like,
It feels like the natural progression, where it's, like, it's kind of donation-based, and it's, like, you know, help us help people, and it seems like somebody would have set that up before the national health system
maybe
got going in the UK. Maybe that was taken over by the NHS over there, and that never happened here. So, but anyway,
sorry to interrupt.
No, I'm not done at all. That's what our story is interruption, right? But but they're talking about it, and it might ask for an indefinite stop of work in February. So we're still kind of, we're seeing if they're talks are going to come out to anything or not.
To but what? Like, turn it over to Osaki Decha?
That's their demands, but that's all, you know. So, within the context of what you were saying, I thought it was interesting how my story was putting it. It was saying that since COVID, what happened was there's a lot of waiting lists. And so...
Or wait times for appointments.
Mm-hmm. So, the main... Like, one of the main things is that... The way that the Basque government appears to be dealing with this is trying to make the list go away by putting those operations or whatever to private firms.
Or, like, encourage people to go private instead of for public.
Yeah, but somehow helping them out with the money to... they'll treat them as if it was public, but you're going to a private... But the Basque government will pay for it as if it was private.
Mm.
So, but then they get to reduce their lists.
I was when I was reading about the medical sector, the transport story, I kind of looked into it, and it said something like the ones that were by Osaki Decha, so there must be some ambulance service by like you were saying, right? Publicly funded. And they were under like a convenio. I don't know how you'd say that in English. Like a
workers...
like the rights of this job. Like this job, you work this many hours a week and you have this much time off, and this is how long you have to work for a shift. And
yeah, and that's, you know, negotiated kind of like by your...
unions. And yeah.
Normally.
So they had certain contracts that allowed, you know, were better conditions for the job. Whereas the private ones were working under, like...
Way worse conditions.
Yeah. And there was nobody protecting them.
Yeah, that's a big thing they want. But I guess I just put them both in the same box. But you're entirely right there.
Yeah.
I guess you can just look at it from that point of view and say what they want is the workers...
To be given the same rights as...
As the public workers, yeah.
That have the same job. That are carrying out the same job.
So in a way, it's the same thing. It's nicely better explained, at least. It's it's a nice way to look at it. I mean, that's what they're saying here as well. But in my brain, it's just the same thing. It's like, I just know that the public health workers are so much better treated and their conditions are so much better. It's clearly.
Yeah.
But the big point that they're making as well is that by not doing it into the Basque Health Service, you're just spending more money, and private companies are making profit.
Yeah.
So,
and exploiting people.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Exactly. Having less days off, having, you know, worse conditions in general.
Yeah. So my story, the guy's like puncturing the tires of ambulances.
Sounds like a union job, eh? Sounds like unions just fucking with private companies, which I'm like...
Sounds like a mob job.
Yeah, but
now it doesn't totally sound mafia.
What mob, you know?
But doesn't it sound totally mafia? Like, just go out there and fuck up their ambulances.
Tires.
And we'll get some attention. I don't know.
I know, but...
Doesn't it? I've been watching a lot of Sopranos. I'm re-watching the Sopranos for the... I think it's the fourth time now.
Okay.
It does sound like something they would do to get things...
Totally. Totally. Totally.
Not that they actually, like, I've never seen, anyway.
It's the weirdest story where I'm like...
it seems counterproductive, right?
Like, my story where they're, like, going on strike and they want the rights, the same rights, and they want to just make it into public. That's basically my story. And it's like, that makes total sense. Your one is like, who the fuck's slashing tires of private companies? Clearly, yeah. It's workers, like public
right.
workers.
Or it's people, unions. Or it's that's people that work up. For those private companies and they're
sure. fucking okay. the, that's true.
Their
that's
own true. Company over because...
Right. They want to be in the convenio. They want to be in the...
Yeah.
Have all so the rights
like until we have,
that the public workers have.
We're mm-hmm. going to make it so you can't function as a business.
That would make more sense. Because my immediate thought was the job. Unions. I guess I don't trust the unions that much. Eh? Nothing against the unions. I love the unions to some extent.
Well, I mean, I think they have a place. They definitely have a place. They're also rife for, you know, they're like ripe for corruption.
Yeah.
At the same time. Like, I think power can corrupt anybody.
Yeah.
And so...
Also in unions.
Right.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
you get a lot of power, power corrupts, right?
Yeah. It's like, I think it very much depends on the context, and it's interesting. Well, like, the Basque Country is such a special example. Just, for example, like, it's the highest number of cooperatives in the world per capita. Like,
yeah?
By far.
Like the Michelin star restaurants.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, again, like, it's just very different than the rest of the world. So I think when yeah. you have this kind of competition with so many kind of groups, I
think and it's so a much healthy, power and policy, you know?
But it's healthy competition.
Yeah. Mm.
But then when I get really skeptical of unions is like in Sweden.
Oh.
Like
why?
Like they're all like boycotting Tesla right now.
Okay.
And it's all because of one union that was like telling Tesla to make some workers into like make them
join unions.
They wanted to give them these standards. It was like a minimum salary and a number of hours.
Okay.
And they're like, the workers never asked for it, number one. Number two, they already got more than that, right? So they got more money than the union was asking for.
Okay.
And, you know, there was basically no problem. But Tesla was like, well, how about that? Workers ask for it, right? And then the union was like, no, you're wrong. You have to sign the thing with the unions and everything. And one of the weird thing was, what was, oh, this is where I was like, fuck those unions, right? This guy has been head of the union that went against Tesla, IF Metall. He's been the head of the union for 37 years. His son is head of another union. It's like, it's such a fucking mafia when you look at the system.
Mm.
It's so clearly, there's no competition, you know?
Nepotism
it's
like, and, yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, you have to become a union. Okay, you have to sign this. And it's like, there's not three unions you can choose from.
No, yeah. I mean, there's that's one what it union. Gets to be like, yeah.
And this guy's creating a new, you know, truckers union for his son. Yeah. And it's like, yeah. It's like it doesn't smell good at all. Whereas in the Basque Country, no, I think unions, you know, there's no systemic problem with unions here.
There probably is, but...
Probably some, but it's not like...
But it's not so many. Like, it's not run by the mob.
Yeah. There's so many. There's good competition.
As far as we know. As far as we know. At the time of the recording, far as we know.
Yes, of course. Like, I never even knew that all the ambulances were weirdly... Private. It's so odd. So yes, we don't necessarily know.
No.
But it generally we've had good results in the Basque Country.
And, I think people work fight for their rights and rightfully so.
Very socially.
And I'm always really like impressed and proud of that, you know, like that they fight so hard for their rights and for what.
How socially conscious the Basque Country is in general.
I like it.
I love it.
Me too.
10 points, Basque.
10 points. 20. I'm going to give him 20.
Ooh, ooh.
20 points.
Okay. That's 20, Basque.
Oh.
No, I was just like...
I know what 10 is. Amar.
Here you go. Nice one.
10. Amar. I don't know what points is, though.
Puntuak.
Amar. Punto. No. Puntuak amar, or would you go amar puntuak?
That's the one.
Amar puntuak.
That's the one. You got it, guys.
Should we do a micro crime time? Because I don't have a mini crime time, really.
Yes,
I have a micro.
We never introduced what a micro crime time is, though. Do you want to explain?
Well, it's just like so silly.
It's a mini crime.
But I've done mini micro crime times.
You have
before.
Did we call it that though?
We called it the mini crime time, but.
But
it was like
when a
so
mini
dumb.
Crime appears in a like chickizode, it becomes a micro crime.
Micro crime time. Okay, so in a cheeky soda, within a cheeky soda.
So what's
it's
your
like
micro
small, and then it gets smaller, right?
Exactly.
So this I committed against myself today.
Okay,
a micro crime time.
Let's hope it's small.
So I have all.
Is it
these...
worse than my self sabotage with my passport?
No, I think yours wins. Yours definitely wins.
Mine makes.
Mine
many.
Was not as like I didn't have to.
Stupid.
I didn't have to field phone calls you know, then go through the whole. I didn't have to mail anything.
Tell me about it. Tell
There's
me
no
about
actual
it.
Extra work involved.
Tell me about it.
So I have all these like samples, like perfume samples,
nice
that I've collected because I always get free samples whenever I buy like makeup or whatever,
right?
From wherever, yep. Sephora and. Wherever you buy makeup, they always give you like these little samples. So I have this little jar in my bathroom with all these little teeny tiny samples of perfume. And I pulled one out today. I was like, shit, I should use these because they're just going to go bad. Yeah. Like, what am I doing? Like keeping them here.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'll just start using them every day and just put a different scent on every day.
Exotic.
And instead of like spraying it to see what it actually smelled like
I went straight
before
into it.
I put it on, and I immediately was, you know, it was a mistake because it just made me smell like an old lady. You know, have you ever walked past an old lady and it's that distinct old lady smell?
I mean, there's various. I think we all have our own.
But it's
smells.
Like a mixture of like baby powder and floral.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I sprayed it on and it was like, it's also like, it was so potent too that, you know, whenever you walk past one of these elderly women that were wearing their perfume,
it's very potent.
You can smell it when they walk past you.
Like
you don't even
meters.
Have to be that near to them.
Meters.
And you can smell what they're wearing.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of perfume it was that I sprayed all over my neck. And then I just... The whole day, I kept smelling myself. I was like, oh my God, I smell like an old lady. So, yeah, it was the crime I committed against
myself.
Did
you put an upside down on...
I should have washed it off. I just never did.
I was imagining...
I just kept smelling... Because I put it on after my shower. So then I just kept... When I was, like, having lunch, I
you just
could smell
it
on myself.
Time,
and I just kept catching whiffs of myself.
Yeah.
I was like, everybody's going to smell...
Old Julie.
Old lady. Yeah, it's really dumb. I told you it was dumb.
I love it. I love it. It's a serious mini crime.
Yeah,
what
it was
you call it?
Micro crime.
It's a serious micro crime.
Against myself.
It's like, I would say at least 20 micro crimes, right? Like every time you got that whiff,
got
you're
a
like,
whiff,
oh.
Yeah, I just kept giving.
Julie.
It was the crime that kept giving.
Yeah. It's kind of like the opposite of making yourself look younger, right?
However, yeah, right? I'm just like, I've given up. I'm an old woman.
Yeah.
And I smell like one too.
I think the next step on your project would be get like a fur coat.
Or blue hair. Blue hair, fur coat.
Don't disparage nationalists.
No, but that's very
but it's
senora, no?
But it's nationalist
hair?
Senora. It's not Indacho
it?
Senora, yeah.
Oh,
it's,
I didn't know
it's
that.
It's Peneuve Senoras. It's not.
Really?
It's not Pepe Senoras. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No Pessoa. Well, maybe Pessoa, but it's like...
Really?
It's a very left-wing thing. Yeah, colored hair. Old ladies with colored hair, like purple, pink, that's very left-wing.
It's a political stance.
It is. Like the straight haircut, like the straight bangs.
The bang, yeah, the short bangs.
That's clearly left-wing nationalist thing here.
Huh.
Both of them, at least traditionally. I get it could be getting
so
weaker.
So what is it to smell like baby powder /... Is that, am I doing anything?
Oh, like politically?
That, is that like a statement?
It's just an ageist
thing. It's an
statement.
Age thing.
Yeah, I think
see,
it's
that's
like,
what I was afraid of. Yeah. Oh, dear.
I think it means I
so
don't work.
My students today were like, whew, this old lady. Here we go. That's what she's trying to try to teach us. This lady don't know shit.
I'm imagining a 10-year-old in like 10 years.
No, it was teenagers. The worst. Oh, it was? The worst.
Well, they're not going to do anything intelligent with that.
No, they can't articulate it.
No. They'll be like, they'll just maybe...
There was just a smell about her. That's what they would say. What do you think of your English teacher? Well, there's just a smell about her. I don't know. I can't place it.
Too serious.
She smells like my grandma. Maybe that would be a good thing. They do have a lot of respect for their grandmas here.
Yeah.
Their amama.
Especially if you go to English or English language
school. Amama is grandma.
One of the versions. There's quite a few.
In Biscaya. Biscay, whatever. How do you call this?
Biscayan.
Biscayan, yeah. And then Biscayan in Gipuzkoa, it's
Amuma.
Amuma, yeah.
Or
Amuma.
There might be another one. There's so
many. No, I think it is Amuma. You're right.
Yeah.
And then grandpa's Aitite.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is it in Gipuzkoa, do you know?
Maybe it's the same. Maybe it's a different one.
I think it's different, but I'm not sure. Anyway, that's our language corner for today.
Language corner for today.
I've learned a few things today. We did a few language.
A couple of words.
Insights.
It's beautiful.
We should probably end this cheeky so, because it's not so cheeky.
It's ending.
It's ending. Let's end it.
You guys can hear the ending. It was it's coming to us.
Yeah, it's coming to the real end.
I hope Douglas, you guys enjoyed it.
It's always a pleasure hanging out with you on a Friday night.
It's been lovely. Lovely drinks. Very chill. Good stories. We toured the world again.
Yes.
With our Basque glasses. Our Basque pink glasses. Or, I guess they're not pink. They're
the rose colored.
Yeah, but like we look at crimes. It is what I meant. But like we look at crimes. So they're not very rosy. They're red colored glasses.
No, it's not.
Are red
colored glasses. It's realistic glasses is what we're looking at the world through. This is the world we live in.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke with VR and realistic, but no, that doesn't work. Too complicated.
Yeah, there's no way you could explain your way out of that. And get
RR. Our RR glasses. Our real glasses.
Well, all right, guys. Dougal. Always a pleasure, and thank you for listening. Yes. If you want to correct us on anything we talked about,
I mean, you know,
please, anybody, send us a fucking email. We've not gotten any emails from listeners, so
you're assuming we have corrections to be made. So I think we might be perfect.
I think I can recognize the huge gaps in my own knowledge.
But did we not admit them?
If somebody can say, you know, this is actually how it is,
please do.
I'd love to hear it. So, or anything else you want to tell us? You know, maybe you want to tell us something else, or tell us one of your mini crime times. We're welcoming those. And our email, is crimesofthebasquelands@gmail.com. So write us, and have yourselves a lovely day, week, month, whatever. And we bid you
agur.
Crimes of the Basque Lands is written and produced by
Douglas D. Carvalho,
Julie Garcia,
and Megan Dooley.
The sound and editing for each episode by
Douglas D. Carvalho,
and Megan Dooley.
Theme song written by
Douglas D. Carvalho,
Julie Garcia,
and Megan Dooley.
Sung by the choir with no name and produced by Tom Squires. Podcast art by Distinct Signal. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Crimes of the Basque Lands, and contact us at crimesofthebasquelands@gmail.com. with story ideas worldwide which have a connection to the Basque Country, or any rave reviews. If you like our podcast, please subscribe, like, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time,
agur!